webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 27th of August 2015, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought leaving the station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Voltaire, that famous atheist, we say, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. And here, from Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher himself, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Williams.
Now we're quoting atheists?
Hey, truth is truth wherever you find it, Michael.
Yes. No, I agree with that. No, I was very pleased to hear we were quoting Voltaire or anyone. As you say, truth is truth regardless of who it comes from. So, and good morning, Barris Bartlett.
Yes, it's a great morning. It's clear skies, blue skies, gorgeous Tennessee day, mate. And I'm looking forward to the next hour with you. By the time we drill down to the real stuff of this conversation, it will be down to 1 hour and 12 minutes, I predict. 1 hour and 12 minutes.
1 hour and 12. Well, let's go for it. What's up, dude?
Man, I tell you what's up. This morning I got a message from Skype saying, you have successfully cancelled your subscription. And I said, hello? What? Who? Where? And I'm trying to find out what it is. And until I can talk to them, I have no idea what that's about. But I noticed that in the process, I've lost voicemails that were, I knew they were there last week and I meant to get to it this week. And I went to go and get them and put them to air today. Questions, and they're not there. So, family, if you have recently sent us in a question or have ever sent us in a question and we haven't answered it, please resend it. The phone number is 234-564-0971, and leave a voicemail. We'll be there somehow or another. That combined with a keyboard that went out yesterday, which I used for everything, has given us quite a bit of a start this morning, Michael.
Yeah, that's not good news. We're supposed to be on here with good news.
Oh, it'll be good really soon. So, Michael, yesterday you and I had a conversation. And in that conversation, essentially, we were covering the topic of when is it right to speak the truth and when isn't it? When is it right to speak your mind and when isn't it? Do you have any comments on that conversation?
Well, of course, my first observation of myself and others included is that when we talk about the truth here at the Gospel Revolution, we're talking about the truth of the gospel, but that's not what we're talking about in this conversation. Speaking the truth and speaking your mind. And honestly, when you get to that point, sometimes I don't know for sure all the time that I'm speaking the truth about a subject. Goodness gracious, I feel I know what I should know about something, hopefully, before I speak. But there's been plenty of times I've been rather convinced that I knew the totality of a subject, and I found out I wasn't speaking the truth at the time. I was just speaking my mind.
Well, let's invent an imaginary subject, and let's put you and me on opposite sides philosophically of that subject. And can we look at it from that perspective? For example, let's say let's say fracking. Fracking is the act by which people, oil companies, pump huge amounts of water into the ground from all accounts, pretty nasty chemicals. And the net result is that they get a lot of oil, make a lot of money, and the farmers around about there can actually take a match to their tap water and light their tap water up because the aquifer becomes polluted. Now, here we have a simple situation which some people are going to be on one side of some people are going to be on the other side of. So you go to your Facebook page and you write about this and you say, oh, this is really bad, or isn't it wonderful how creative and inventive we are that we can get oil where no one thought there was oil? At what point in a public concourse, which Facebook is, at what point do we back off and just say, look, I want to just love on people, or I just want to have some friends here and be quiet about the things that we might deep down believe in?
And
for this conversation, you're the person who believes in fracking, and I'm the person who believes it's wrong. just so that I can really tear strips here.
Well, I think even without going into the discussion of fracking or not fracking, we can look at this. And of course, there are going to be two very divergent opinions. And the thing of it is that the reasons people come to their conclusions can be very motivating. Politics. I'll guarantee you that where fracking is concerned, most people are going to take the position for or against, not just based on the issue of fracking, but which political party is will say yay and which political party will say nay.
So this is what you're saying is this is going to be a discussion that will become polarized by politics.
It will become polarized by politics. No doubt about it. That is for sure. So in those subjects, I personally stay away from them.
Why?
I stay away from them because I have a real desire to have the ear of as many people as possible in sharing the gospel.
Why is that?
Because I believe it is the truth, and truth is that which is equally applicable to all people, regardless of what you think or what you believe about anything. And that's the powerful thing about the gospel. It is unique in any religious teachings whatsoever, in that virtually everything that we teach in the Gospel Revolution, Barris, is totally applicable to every human being, regardless of what they think. It's like gravity. So gravity or anything that we would say, now this is an absolute truth. It's moved out of the arena of opinion because it qualifies in what really, I have to admit, this is my definition of what I think truth is, but I've found pretty universally that people agree with that, that truth has to be something that is equally applicable to all. So I want as many of those ears as I can. And I know that if I enter into a political fray, if I enter into explicit sexual discourse, there's several arenas in which I just would refrain from expressing my opinion.
Now, that doesn't mean you don't have an opinion.
No, I, oh.
And it doesn't mean that you don't have a strong opinion.
I've got strong opinions.
What you're saying is you refrain from expressing them. Okay.
Right. Now, I thought about this after we had our conversation. Why am I comfortable with that? Why in the world am I comfortable with that? Because that was a part of our discussion in, are we betraying ourselves by not expressing our views equally?
Mm.
And I really thought about that after we got off the phone. And there was something that came up in a conversation that I had with a friend, and they asked, what is my most treasured possession or treasured thing that is in my life? And I think, you know, they were probably expecting me to say my daughter, my grandson, the gospel, or, I don't know what they were expecting, but I didn't know what to expect either. This was another one of those times, Barris, when I had to wait to see what come out of my mouth to see what opinion I had. And I get caught in places like that way too often. And this was my response. My most treasured possession, the most treasured thing that I have, the thing that I value more than anything on planet Earth, more than anything, far more than anything, is my thoughts. After coming to understand the gospel, my thoughts used to be my enemy. My thoughts used to be something I needed to control, something I needed to change my mind. I needed to change this. But I have come to treasure my thoughts. Now, we live in a country, as many countries have, freedom of speech. It's not that I can, that anyone can tell me that I cannot express my opinion about my politics or any other thing. I have the freedom to do that in this country, and in many countries I would have that freedom to do that without fear of legal repercussions. The law would be on my side to allow me to express my opinion. But the gospel gave me freedom of thought. There is no government on this earth that can give me freedom of thought. Only the gospel can give you freedom of thought, freedom of conscience. Let me quote my eighth grade uncle, Roger Williams, and say that anything spiritual should produce freedom of conscience. And a person's right to let their conscience be the dictate for their life. We would probably say, you know, follow your heart instead of the term conscience, I suppose. But freedom of thought is what comes to me when somebody says freedom of conscience. I love the fact that no matter what somebody is saying around me, I still have my thoughts. Now, let me tell you how I view my thoughts. My thoughts are like currency. I spend my thoughts in places where it is going to bring a return.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. I don't want to throw my thoughts into an oblivion. I don't want to waste my thoughts. If you take the term thoughts and replace it with the word money, that's where I get my understanding of this treasure that I have. You know, when Paul says we have this treasure within, now we know this treasure is righteousness and holiness and perfection, God in us, literally. But I think the most powerful conclusion to all of that is that I have the freedom to think anything. I am not condemned by any thought that I have, Barris. And believe me, I remember when I first started embracing some of this, I started talking about people who thought that because they were men of God, that they could not have these thoughts and all of this. And about, you know, that I'm righteous and holy because I don't do this and don't do that. And I started getting nervous laughter back from this, and I started telling people, you know, the fact is I have thoughts that, quite honestly, if you knew that I had these thoughts, you wouldn't even come and hear me speak. Now, that's how vulnerable I made myself in front of groups that you and I know and all of our listeners know. Why would you make yourself so vulnerable to say that? Because rather than letting people know what all of my thoughts are, I want you to know I've got the freedom to think them.
Now, I want to go back and revisit a comment you made earlier, and that is that your thoughts are currency. So I'm going to presume, and you stop me if I get this wrong, I'm going to presume that for you, having the thoughts is having a big old a pot of gold or a savings account.
A treasure.
And speaking a treasure.
Yeah.
A treasure. That's good. And speaking those thoughts is where you get to spend
yes.
that treasure. Once you've spoken it, it's spent.
Yes.
And what you're saying is, just like money, you're very careful where you spend them.
One should be. It doesn't mean that all people are.
But you are.
But I do, yes. Mm-hmm. I take great caution in where I spend my thoughts.
And you choose to spend your thoughts
mm-hmm.
in a prioritized manner.
I do indeed. Now, the issue comes up is to, which is part of our conversation yesterday, is, but isn't it, am I not under some moral obligation to tell the truth? And you and I have had this conversation about speaking the truth, telling the truth. There's the truth of the gospel, and then there's telling the truth about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am much in favor of telling the truth about things. Because I withhold my thoughts, am I being dishonest, or am I not being truthful? And if I keep this in this arena, and maybe this is how I'm rationalizing it, I don't know. We need to hear from some gospel revolutionaries about what they have to say about these things, you know. As long as I keep it in this category of understanding my thoughts as currency, I'm not obligated to tell everybody or anybody what my thoughts are about any subject. Now, if somebody is asking about me about what I did or do, then I feel obligated to tell the truth.
Now, the reason we had this conversation is because I have a keen sense of injustice. I hate injustice. Now, that doesn't mean I have not been unjust myself. Just because I am a liar, or I'm unjust, or I'm whatever I am, doesn't stop me criticizing other people with the same flaw.
Called being human.
That seems to have been, for me, some impetus deep down somewhere. And let's just go with the simplest explanation. Someone unjustly accused me when I was a child, and so I've grown up with this chip on my shoulder, and I must at all times fight injustice. Let's say that's a story, a psychological story. But when I come up against an unjust situation, what I'm hearing you say is, have your own thoughts about it. Choose wisely where you're going to spend those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to read three verses from Paul, because Paul was no fool, it seems, and he always seemed to have something to say on just about everything.
So you're going to pull the Bible out on me now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think I am. Hey,
that's not fair.
I came across a fascinating... funny, you know, you can read the Bible for years, and because you think it's one book, you're told it's one book, you treat it like it's one book, like everybody agrees with each other. But the fascinating thing is, you take Paul out of the Bible and all you've got is Judaism.
Yeah.
Take Paul out of the Bible, you've got no teaching on a church, an ecclesia. You've got no teaching on justification, sanctification, redemption, salvation. None of those things are covered anywhere else in the Bible except by the pen of Paul. Is that not fascinating?
I am not surprised, but I'm sure glad that you dug that up for us, because it's important to know. I think that our interrupting here just a moment. I think that our teaching that you and I both did without collaboration to do so on this subject of you actually brought into your teaching the title that I had brought over those two of the sessions I was doing, two views of the good news. And when I applied that, you realized that's exactly the same thing you're doing from a historical perspective. And people need to know that Paul's, that even, not only would the gospel not be there, Christianity wouldn't be there.
Wouldn't be there.
If it wasn't for Paul's teachings on these subjects, because nobody else taught on them. That's just utterly amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I'm going to mention three verses here, Michael. One is,
where are you going?
Paul writing in Philippians 3:13, he says, I'm not sure that I can count myself as having gotten it all together, but this one thing I do,
mm-hmm.
forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are before. Now, I once heard a preacher say that one of Paul's strengths was that he didn't ride Roman style. In other words, he didn't try and ride two horses at once, but he was one-eyed, focused, and knew what his priorities were and where he was going. Now, that doesn't mean he couldn't have done or said other things, but it just means that that was his general attitude. Now, in 1 Corinthians 9:22, he says, to the weak I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all, that I might by all means save some. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be a partaker of it with you. Now, that sounds to me like what you were saying a little bit earlier, that you've prioritized. It doesn't mean that other things which may or may not be true do not deserve attention. But as far as Paul was concerned, they were down the ladder of priorities, and he became whatever he needed to become to win some to the gospel. Now we have a saying in modern English, when in Rome, do as the Romans. But he was actually the person who invented that. Whether or not Shakespeare came along later and added to it is another thing. But Paul is a guy that said, look, I don't care where I am. I will become whatever I need to become in order to win some for the gospel's sake. Now, the third verse I wanted to read was Ephesians 4:15. And I remember back in my Pentecostal days, you would get prophets come through. I'm a prophet of the Lord, and I speak the truth, and you need to listen to the truth, and here's the truth for you, bam, bam, bam. And you'd go up and say, that's not very nice, either what you said or how you said it. And they'd say, oh, I'm a prophet. I just speak the truth. And I'd look at them in the eye and I'd say, that's BS. Because Paul talked about speaking the truth in love.
Yeah.
And if you can't speak the truth in love, why bother calling yourself a prophet? Because God is love. Jesus, the big thing in Corinthians 13 is love. And you're coming along saying, but because I'm a prophet, because I've got this gifting that I've decided I've got, or somebody decided I've got, I can say anything the hell I like, any way I like, and it doesn't matter because I'm in town today and I blow off tomorrow. It doesn't matter the wreckage that I leave behind. But Paul's thing was speaking the truth in love. As we're talking, these three verses hit me kind of in the gut. One, Paul says, I'm one-eyed and focused. Two, Paul says, I want to speak the truth in love. And thirdly, Paul says, I will do whatever it takes for the gospel's sake.
Barris, we stand in such a unique position now. This issue of the gospel. Now, see, the fact of it is, Christianity almost requires that you have a certain political position. Christianity, in and of itself, does have a political position for the most part. While there are Christians who are Republican and Democrat, as far as the organization of Christianity, it pretty well has a position, and it's based in morality and in other things. But the amazing thing about where we stand with the gospel is that the gospel does not take any of those positions. It is something far greater that gives you, and again, not the freedom of speech. We've got that through our Constitution. But the Constitution cannot give you freedom of thought. Only the gospel can give you freedom of thought to where that you have this incredible treasure, and honestly, you learn to spend and expend it in ways that are profitable. But at the same time, there is a knowledge that we carry as proclaimers of this good news that puts every idea and thought that I have about anything in a back seat that says, okay, kind of like the kids, you know, when you're driving down the road and the kids are in the back seat, you got to keep them quiet. You tell them, all right, it's time to quiet down, kids. That's the way I see my, all the rest of my thoughts are like kids in the back seat. And I just tell them, you know, hey, you know, I know you want to express yourself. I know that you want to say what you want to say, but right now you're just going to have to be quiet for a greater purpose. I'm trying to drive the car. I'm trying to negotiate traffic. But I believe that we stand in such a unique place. I just don't want to. Now I've got the freedom to. I've got the right to. There's nobody who can tell me that I cannot express my political opinions because of the gospel. This is a choice I make for myself. No one has imposed this on. Nobody told me this, Ferris. Nobody told me to do it. And I have imposed on myself, if I spend my thoughts on this subject, is it going to cost me the expression that I have in sharing the gospel with some people? Will this opinion cause the truth of the gospel to not be heard out of my mouth because people have such strong political opinions? Now, I have strong political opinions, but boy, they pale compared to the understanding of the truth of the gospel. And I personally don't feel a need to defend my position, and neither am I going to. That's my right to think what I think, and I'm going to think it whether somebody agrees with me or not, and I can even think it without saying, this is what I think.
Now, another side of this is we have had people write into us, call us up, and tell us that they don't approve of what we do because we've spoken too much about this subject or that subject. One of them is somebody's called us up and said that the stories we have on sex are too much and too many, and of course the problem is when you've got the likes of Josh Duggar and others who, I mean, the gift that keeps on giving, really, stories about the incomprehensible duplicity of dualism. It's difficult to avoid these topics. Homosexuality, gay lifestyle is another one. And we have at times spoken very freely about those things and will continue to speak freely about them as much as they are a gospel issue.
Exactly.
I accept to say that politics, let's say right-wing and left-wing politics, will never be a gospel issue. Unless, of course, we're talking about how dualism so splits the mind that it becomes incomprehensible to the normal person that we are all one. So then it becomes a gospel issue. We'll talk about that. But I don't know that we've ever we have spoken about that. But there are topics that we will avoid, not because we not because of any other reason than unless something about the gospel can be magnified in discussing these things, there is no point. So when you write in and you say, we don't like you talking about these topics, neither are we. Well, maybe I do like talking about sex, I don't know, but we don't particularly talk about any topic for any other reason than to magnify the gospel.
That's our hope, Barris. We are not going to do this perfectly. We are perfect. We are righteous. Me and Barris Bartlett are holy, complete, without fault, without blemish in God's sight.
Not like any of the, not like any of you. We're different. We're men of God.
We are men of God. But we don't do things perfectly. We will never, ever please everyone. Now, here's the thing, though. There has never been a letter come in, whether it was when Glenn was with the show or you. We have never had a letter come in of a complaint that has not been discussed. We have discussed every single one of them. Now, because it's important. Now we have to make a decision.
You mean discussed on the air or discussed
between us. Uh-huh. We've discussed every one of those, and we decide that when I'm sharing the gospel, you know, the terms that we were taught way back in Christianity of the harvest and all of this, it really comes into my mind. I've shared this with you before. I remember being up in Canada several years ago, and one of the gentlemen who loved the teaching, much like James Gustafson, who sits in his tractor and drives and listens all day long to the gospel. Mm. I got in one of these big tractors that not only is it wider than your house, it has two extensions that drop down and wide again. And
it needs to be that big to house James Gustafson, I should say, just on the side.
Except this was not James Gustafson in this particular case. And but I saw this extremely wide swath, and many times that's the image that comes to my mind. When we are deciding, do we bring this into the subject of the gospel? Is this woven into the subject? Are we going to be able to harvest everything in one swath or in one program? It's kind of like each program we make a pass across the field, you know? And are we going to be able to harvest everything in that one pass? No. But where can we take the biggest swath? What position in bringing things, and we're not talking about taking positions on topics. We're talking about bringing topics into the subject of the gospel. If we're not doing that, we're not doing it. That's just all there is to it. Because we all, myself and Barris and Jeff, and many others are taking this position of their own free accord. We don't have a standard of gospel revolutionary. We have gospel revolutionaries that are extremely political on the right and extremely political on the left.
And let us know it.
Yes, and let us know we should have their position. And we do. We believe every one of you. We think you're right. So, but our heart is for the mainframe of every person's conscience. Barris, I have freedom of thought. Oh my God. I have freedom of conscience. I'm not condemned by any of my thoughts. Do you know how honest you can be with yourself when you have freedom of thought? I have thoughts that, my goodness, if I acted on them, I'd be in jail today. Now, anybody else can say, oh, my God, Mike Williams said he has thoughts and sent him to jail. Go ahead. I don't care. That's something. But you'll never know what those thoughts are. There are people that do, though, Varys. I have people that I share those thoughts with just so I can reflect on them and say, you know, wow, this is really weird. I was thinking about this or that. And I have thought about killing people. It has crossed my mind. I'm, you know, if that so disappoints you that you can't listen to Mike Williams anymore, but I can tell you for sure I have never killed anybody.
And probably never likely to.
I don't think that I have the inclination to do it, but has it crossed my mind in situations at the spur of the moment? Oh, yes. And I can give you situations where that I would have virtually every gospel revolutionary standing behind me in doing so. They certainly would not condemn me in the people that I have thought about killing in various ways, even. So, but I'm not condemned by those thoughts, Barris. I'm not condemned by them. Therefore, I am not driven by them. So the value of freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, is, let me say this out loud, freedom of conscience and freedom of thought is far more powerful than freedom of speech. The reason it's greater is because a government can give you freedom of speech, but only the gospel can give you freedom of thought and freedom of conscience.
That's great stuff.
Only the gospel can give you that.
Now, there is another dimension to what we're doing here, and that is that we stand between people who are trapped in religion and people who are free, people for whom the gospel has provided a way of escape, people for whom the gospel has become so real and so true and so freeing that they don't even need us anymore. Can I tell you how rotten that feels? I want people to need me.
Please tell everybody, Bears.
I want people to need us badly, so badly that they give till it hurts or something. I don't know.
But, or at least call.
really. I mean, yeah, anyway.
I mean, when you have people stand in front of you and cry and weep and say you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, if I hadn't met you, I'd be dead and my life would be over. And then you don't hear from them for 2 years.
Or ever. And see, this is the strength and the weakness of you, if you like, of where we stand. The weakness of where we stand is once you take out all the religion and the manipulation and the do this, and if you do this, you'll get something from it. You seed time and harvest, all of that stuff. You sow and you reap. Once you remove that as a function of your relationship with God, guess what? You don't tithe. I don't know if it's good or bad, Mike, but it is. That's all I'm going to say. And here is the thing. Where the gospel revolution has positioned itself, where we have positioned ourselves, is in a place where we can help people who are trapped in religion and help them slowly, step by step, maintain a journey which has direction and focus towards their own freedom by following their own heart. We are not going to, regardless of what people tell us to do, we are not going to place ourselves in a position of risking that. We're not going to let that stop us telling the truth about the gospel. We're not going to let that stop us preaching the gospel. But we also are very careful, as Paul said, we are trying to speak the truth in love to a group of people who need this gospel, and they have a gospel-shaped hole in their heart, and the moment they hear it, they say, oh my God, such freedom. They're the people that we don't want to, we're going to lose you anyway. You've proven that.
That's powerful, Barris.
But we don't want to lose
them. I don't want you to say it, but it's powerful. It is powerful. And, you know, and the people that can that are understanding what we're saying are people who have stuck around for the purpose that they want others to hear. Now, we're not incriminating those who have not. You're free. That is the ultimate. You are free.
Yeah.
You are free. And if part of the freedom that you need is freedom even from the gospel revolution, we support that move.
Mm.
Now, that's craziness in any world of any organization trying to do anything to say that we even support you leaving us.
Now, the people.
We support you becoming atheists. Uh-huh. You can't take a place that the position of the gospel revolution is not to support you in your freedom of choice and conscience to take that step.
Now, the people who want to deprecate us, the people who love to slander us, and they're all mainline.
Oh, they're all going to hell.
Well, I'm talking about mainline Christianity leaders, and who say that those people over in the universalism camp or the redemptionism camp or those people in the gospel revolution, they're just manipulative, they are deceitful, they are, and then the list goes on. Let me tell you something. If we were that, we would have made sure that you stayed around because staying around was good for your eternal health, if your spiritual health. If ask yourself, who are really manipulating the truth to have you stay around for your supposed spiritual health? I'll tell you who it is. It's them.
Yes, exactly. And
that's why they don't. Freedom, you know what? If there's
one. Because the one place, Bears, they know you're not going to go if you leave the gospel revolution, they know you're not coming back to them.
Yep. Well, it's, you know, I don't know one gospel revolutionary or one person. 2 million people a year voting with their feet to leave mainline Christianity. I don't know one of them that's gone back and felt totally, utterly at home. You can't feel at home there anymore.
That's very true.
Well, I don't know. We've got, we don't have a show yet, but let me see what else I've got here. Well, I didn't expect that to morph into what it turned into there, but that was an excellent, excellent.
I think so too, Bears. Thank you so much. And see, this just once again shows the value of being able to communicate and to be able to communicate honestly with one another, because anytime you do that, it can't do anything but result in something good. It doesn't mean anybody's going to change their minds. But boy, is it to me, Barris, it's so powerful to even speak with somebody that I do disagree with, which I don't mind doing. But if I don't think that I'm going to wind up back at a point of being one, regardless, I ain't having the conversation. I'm just not going to do it. And so it's a powerful thing to be able to do, and maybe someday we'll all be mature enough. We've got. Let me add this to this conversation, just to show you how this isn't a solid position. It's fluid, folks. This is a fluid position because the ears of people that we never dreamed we would have are now listening. That I have said things, let me not spread this part around to all of us. I have said things I wish I could take back.
Mm.
I think, oh my God, I hope they don't listen to this tape or that tape. Because guess whose ear we now have? We have the Muslim community's ear.
Mm.
Now, I don't talk a lot about it because it's weird. I don't even know how to express it to you. I'm very proud of that fact. I'm not sure what...
It's strapped from the master's heart.
I'm sorry.
I'm not sure what's happening. It's straight from the master's heart. That's actually probably pretty good to leave in there. Validation. So,
I believe that was a voice from heaven.
That was the voice of God. So... So now I'm getting reports back from Kenya from Muslim people, even named Mohammed, who are saying they and their whole family and many of their friends love Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Now, I'm terribly humbled by that. I'm stricken. I don't even know if it's a good thing. to be loved is a great thing, but what else do we need in the Gospel Revolution for Christianity to come back and attack us than to say, well, the Muslims love you. Well, I guess you're in bed with the Muslims then you're a terrorist. That's the next thing we're going to be, is a terrorist by association, I suppose. But, Barris, I think of some of my off the cuff opinions and statements that I have made about Islam. Did I mean the statements that I said when I said them? Yes. But now we have the opportunity for the Islamic world with these beautiful Muslim people to hear our voice. I am so concerned that I've said something on a tape or something that they're going to hear that would cause their ears to be shut. So from now on, I've added a layer of things that I'm not going to spend my opinion on quite so recklessly. I'm going to be spending my opinions on the issue of Islam with consideration to the fact I've got the ear of people who are in that religion. So see, this is a fluid situation. This is not an absolute. We talk about this, we don't talk about that. There may be things that we've not talked about that we will talk about, because they may become very much gospel issues in the future.
We have a story this week from, it comes to us from Moses Garter in Kenya, who is our on the ground mover and shaker of the gospel into Muslim communities over in Africa. And he brought us a story of Chris Oyakhilome. This gentleman's a Nigerian minister who whose wife has just divorced him. He's worth between $30 and $50 million U.S. dollars, according to Forbes magazine, and that was in 2011. He, when you go to his website, which I just pulled up, that was where you heard the master's voice. When I went to his website, he proudly says, "I'm Pastor Chris P."
It's straight from the master's heart. It's got precious words. Contains deep insights, providing sure direction to chart lives' courses and keep you in charge so you can have the great life you desire.
Oh, wouldn't we all like that? The great life. I mean, Joel Osteen's probably beaten him to it, but this guy's no slouch, $30 to $50 million net worth. But the story that Moses Garter brought us was that this man, after his wife had divorced him, and I'm not sure yet why that is, but I can guarantee it's not something good. The founder of Believers Love World Ministries, oh my God, also known as Christ Embassy. Why don't you call it Jesus City? Don't stop there, Pastor Chris. On Sunday, enjoined his congregation to refrain from speaking against a man of God. Also suspended one of his pastors in Lagos for her quote-unquote subversive activities. The reason for Mrs. Okijoki's, these aren't names, surely to God, Mrs. Okijoki's suspension was not given. See, I love the way that transparency becomes the very first casualty. At the church's Sunday service, Mr. Okijoki described a man of God as different from a preacher, as one who had been given a revelation from heaven. A man of God is somebody who's been given a revelation from heaven. If you haven't been given a revelation from heaven, ipso facto, you are not a man of God or a person of God. To speak against the man of God is to bring a curse on yourself and your children.
Yeah, well, you know, it sounds like you're trying to say Oklahoma and Muskogee there. So
I'm an Okie from Muskogee. Yeah, I like it. That is fun.
When you Pastor hit, Oklahoma and Associate Pastor Muskogee.
Muskogee, I love it.
But, boy, didn't we hear all, didn't we say all of that?
But hang on.
Is there more?
Oh, there's better, too. When you hear people speaking against a man of God, move away from there. Men of God don't just talk. When they speak, God is forced to move. Now go.
Yeah. Oh, dear Lord. Familiarity breeds contempt. I'm very familiar with...
My mum used to say familiarity breeds.
Yes, it does indeed. Yeah,
which I'm going to guess is part of Pastor Oklahoma's problem here. I'm just guessing here.
Yeah, I think that may be the case. But goodness gracious, this authoritarian position of men, especially men, taking this position that. Once they become in a position of leadership, there, you know, don't touch God's anointed. Well, once you understand the gospel, that's everybody. You can't take these exclusive positions. I'm a man of God. Well, and let's go just a step further with this gentleman. We not only speak up about this. This falsehood. We're instructed in Isaiah that we have the right, you don't have to do it, but we have the right to condemn every prophecy that comes out of someone's mouth. Every judgment that comes out of somebody's mouth after the cross is what Isaiah was prophesying. So we not only speak about this, we condemn your judgment of people who come against the man of God. Now, here's the bizarre thing. The man of God is a man of God. But he's speaking to other men and women of God. That's what should defuse his judgments, is because we are equal, but he's very mistaken in that he does not understand the gospel at all. Now, Mike, shouldn't you tremble, though you've just spoken not only against the man of God, you've condemned his judgments. You've condemned his words. Yes, I have condemned his words.
Where is your love?
That is my love. I am condemning these words so that he can shake himself and not. I feel sorry for people that stand in that position of judgment. I remember carrying it, and it's not. It's not an easy load to carry.
Hey, mate.
Now, $50 million helps you carry
it. Yeah, yeah. You knew what I was going to say.
I am so confident of the gospel that I condemn this man's words. I condemn his forecast of destruction on people's lives. Now, I'm condemning his words, and there's no destruction coming to his life. In fact, I'm also making a gospel statement in that he is a righteous and holy and perfect man in the eyes of God.
We should put it properly. He's holy, righteous, and perfect millionaire in the eyes of God.
Yes. Well, the holy, perfect, and righteous is what is qualified by the gospel anyway. But nonetheless, he is indeed a millionaire. And who knows? Maybe he will see the light of day and contribute $1 million to the gospel revolution.
We'll accept it.
Yeah, tainted money.
We'll take drug money. We don't care.
That's like I remember Carlton Pearson back when Oral Roberts got into trouble for saying God was going to kill him if he didn't raise enough money to build City of Faith. And the racetrack owner down in Florida donated $1 million. And I said that people criticize Oral Roberts for taking that gambling money. And they said it was tainted. And Carlton Pearson says, yes, it is. Taint enough.
All right. Just one last thing here with Pastor Oklahoma and the Pastor Muskogee that he is suspended. and I've got to, I just can't help myself. I'm speaking the truth in love. Please understand that, Michael. The church is not a social club where you can walk in and walk out at will and live disorderly. Pastor Michelle is hereby suspended from the fellowship. Avoid her. Do not fellowship with her. Do not try to counsel her or receive counsel from her. All you can do is direct her to her pastor. Do not be a partaker of another man's sins. Efforts to ascertain from the church members the real reason for Okie-Jokie's suspension were unsuccessful as all the church members approached for comment declined to speak. I love the transparency. Ain't that exactly what Christianity does? But one who spoke over the telephone said that the pastor was suspended for blasphemy. And here is a kicker. She has been suspended for blaspheming against the ministry. But we don't exactly know why, said the church member who did not want a name published for faith reasons. What the hell is that? For faith reasons? Doesn't want her name mentioned? No, she doesn't want a name mentioned for fear reasons.
Boy, I would think that's correct.
Oh, glory. When you set yourself up as anything different from anyone else, you are now partaking in dualism. Dualism, let's remember, is the exact opposite of the gospel. The gospel proclaims we are one. You and us are one. We and God are one. There is no two entities here. We're one. Just like when you put the tea bag in the water, now you've got a totally new product called tea, liquid tea, and it's impossible under any natural methods to extract one from the other. They're now one thing. Now, that's not exactly true, but it's true enough for me. And dualism says, oh, there are holy people and there are holier people. Of course, by definition, that means there's unholy people. Dualism. There are men of God and there are people who are not men of God. Dualism. Everything that is associated with dualism, everything associated with it, is all about self-righteousness. If God and I are separate, then I have to be self-righteous. I have to get a righteousness myself to deserve anything that God wants to do for me. If I'm a man of God, that's my self-righteousness. Everything I do is right, according to this crazy article. You talk against me, you're blaspheming a ministry. Where the hell is that in the Bible? Nope, really? But I'll tell you where it is in a 30 to 50 million worth of assets. I'll tell you that. It's very important for that. Mm-hmm. What a goose this man is. But all he's doing is he's not doing anything differently than what he was taught. We Americans went overseas. We gave our you'll be pleased to know that in matters of sex, there is something called the missionary position. Guess why it's called the missionary position? Because we taught people that any other way is bad, is sinful, is not of God. I mean, how do you like to have that? If you ask 100 people what position is the most popular position in sex, they will tell you. The world who never even knows the name of Jesus knows what that's called. That is Western missionaries' gift to the world. And what they did was, we did it. We sent people across to other countries, and as Jesus said to the Pharisees, you cross the oceans to make one convert, and when you do, you make him twice the child of the devil that you are. And this Oklahoma dude, this fool who believes he's a man of God and you're not a man of God, and that makes a huge difference, this idiot is the result of Western missionary efforts. Think about that.
We have exported a lot of bondage around the world, that is for sure. And if you export Christianity, you are exporting bondage. And it has been exported from a lot of places around the world also.
You go to Samoa. I learned this a few years ago, Michael. You go to Samoa, and what happened back there was that a missionary would come in, a whole village would convert. It was their culture that the whole village would. So in Samoa today, you've got Presbyterian villages, Methodist villages, Pentecostal villages, Baptist villages. And we went into another culture and turned the whole damn thing upside down using our shame-based behavior modification systems. It's just too sad.
It is indeed. And that is why we take the opportunity to share this gospel is, it's amazing that when you come to terms with the reality that Christianity has created a harvest for the gospel that is unparalleled in the history of this planet, I don't know of anything that has prepared the world for the gospel and the need of the gospel more than what Christianity has prepared it to for the need, because of this mix of Judaism and Christianity. I can't even say the gospel because I can't find Barris. I'd love to find gospel somewhere in Christianity. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they asked me the question, and I had to conclude, I can't tell you one thread of gospel that is in Christianity. Other than they mentioned the cross, all of the things are there, but the words, there are no words in Christianity that are the gospel. Jesus is there, the cross is there, the death, the burial, the resurrection is there, but the definition of that, there is no gospel in their definition of that. So they have created a vacuum for the gospel that is, I think we've got some incredible things coming ahead of us we may be at some point encouraging people to move on from the gospel revolution because we just got too many of you. Yeah.
Well, what we'll do is we'll start meetings, and we'll do what this Pastor Oklahoma does. In his church in Lagos, there are metal detectors on the way in, because apparently his God's not big enough to save them from having guns or something,
protect
I guess.
Protect the man of God.
Protect the man of God, yep. And at the entrance, you've got automated teller machines. I mean, this is in Lagos, Nigeria. This is in Africa. Automated teller machines. I'm telling you, it's no wonder he's worth $50 million. Michael, lift your game, fella. You're not doing it right.
Evidently. I'm just not sure where to install the bank machine. We'll have to figure that out first. Goodness gracious.
Okay. So you're not sure about quoting atheists at the beginning, at the top of the program?
Yeah, no, actually I'm very proud of that. That's we first got highly criticized because we quote, and it's still there. Probably stubbornly so, still there after we received criticism for quoting Marianne Williamson on the website about us, our greatest fear being our greatness, not our weakness and our faults. And boy, we really did get a lot of conflict about that. But that statement is truth. It is gospel truth, not political truth, not truth based on somebody's opinion. But that really is a gospel truth. So we kept that statement up there by Mary Ann Williams, and I've had other people tell me that it is falsely accredited to her. And until we find out for sure, one way or the other, we like the statement. I love the statement. I love the comment that is made, and it is attributed in at least our resources to her. So it's going to stay up. I love that we quote atheists. Goodness, we'll quote anybody. We could probably come closer to quoting an atheist than we could a Christian.
We're just a bunch of tramps. We'll just quote anybody. Oh, dear. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Minaminike. I am an Amazon Prime user, and this book is the only 5-star product I've seen on Amazon. It's great. It's in the top 1% of all book sales on Amazon. It's written by my friend Pep Washburn, and a prize friend of the Gospel Revolution, is without question the best book touching authentic spirituality I've ever read. The two series we recorded in Calgary a few weeks ago, they're up for access. Just go to the website and get the links to that. And they are fantastic because I'm on them. Oh, Michael's on them too. That's right. You know, $1 a week is nothing. I mean nothing. But here at the Gospel Revolution, $1 a week can make the difference for someone just like you who are starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value for value model here. If you feel that you've received real value from these podcasts, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating $1 a week or $1 a day. Why don't you just call our office on area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about what is possible to be done. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. After I get it straightened out with Skype, that should still work. You can find us at Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so now it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from myself, Michael Williams, right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you, guys. We really encourage you to treasure your freedom. Freedom of thought, freedom of conscience. We hope that what we've shared with you today has been encouraging. And if you have any comments about it, please do send them our way. And we stand up. We would be the first to defend your freedom of speech. But we're not here teaching freedom of speech. We're here teaching freedom of conscience. And it is a treasure that is in these human vessels that we hope you treasure it also.
Today you heard two friends discussing a topic that they discussed on the phone yesterday, and I personally just felt it was important enough, and that enough other people out there probably ask themselves the same question for us to pursue it today. Didn't expect it to get as much traction as it did, but I'm awfully proud to call Mike Williams a friend of mine and to be able to say this was a great conversation, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Just like this time, better.
See you later, Mike.
Thank you, Barris. It was wonderful.
It was good. It was natural, and it was. I enjoyed it. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you too, my friend.
Bye-bye.